probably the solution is never to pretend to be something we're not and to try to force ourselves to be some type of way. Because that was the thing for the longest time. I thought that I was like flaky for having all these different iterations. Really, honestly, genuinely very embarrassed of all the different pivots I've taken, especially because in the past, every time that I've taken a pivot, I've come out so confident with it. Like, I've been like, this is me now. This is fully what I'm doing. And then 6 months later, I'm doing something slightly different. It's just been like accepting that that's part of me and no longer feeling ashamed of it. If anything, feeling proud of it, feeling like, hey, that's actually really cool that I'm that creative and that I have this many ideas and that I have the ability to pursue them all. Like, that's honestly magical.
Connecting the dots with the Renaissance people.
Hello, Renaissance people and people who would like to cultivate a Renaissance mindset. It's your favorite Renaissance woman, Sarah Kobilka, coming to you from underneath a blanket on my couch, where I am attempting to record so that the sound of my dog playing with a toy nearby is not being heard. I am excited for today's show. You're going to be listening to me and Marika Luneau talking for about an hour. But I want to tell you, this baby took a lot of work to come into reality. It was a beast to edit. I had all sorts of issues with echoes. And in fact, I recorded the entire thing hearing an echo of my own voice, not Marika's, just mine, in my ear. So if I sound a little bit strange at times, or if there's a little mechanical quality to my voice, that's the reason why. But it's here, it exists, and we're calling it good enough, says the recovering perfectionist. I want to throw a couple other things out there. One, there's an acronym that we use that I realized we did not define. That is PMDD. That stands for premenstrual dysphoric disorder. And there's a link to information about that in the show notes. Take a drink. We'll explain that later. And I also want to tell you that a bubbler is a drinking fountain. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, go back, listen to episode 3, my interview with Melissa Vining, and you'll find out what a tease. But let me tell you a little bit about today's show. This includes a love fest about multiple things, including Jenny Gritters and her now closed Sustain program, and Venn diagrams. Who doesn't love a good Venn diagram? We're all walking Venn diagrams as Renaissance people anyways. We connected the dots with women in STEM and business, and we talked about why bureaucracy bothers us so much. We talked about the neurospicy tendencies in Renaissance people. We discussed LinkedIn strategy and using focused messaging with umbrella terms. And the importance of finding your people. And if you're looking for your people, hey, they're part of the Renaissance community. So I encourage you to sign up for updates on this podcast, as well as everything going on in the Renaissance people community. And you can do that by going to renwomanconsulting.com. That's Ren with one N. And you'll find all sorts of upcoming opportunities to engage with others. Let's get this thing started. Here we go.
So I want to start right off, Marika, with my opening question that I'm asking everyone. So, which term aligns best with your own personal identity? Renaissance person, maybe Renaissance man, Renaissance woman, multi-passionate, generalist, versatilist, Jack, Jill, Jay of all trades, boundary spanner, or maybe something else?
It was multi-passionate, and I think it still is, but I do love your Renaissance woman term. I totally associate that with you and your brand, and I love it. I really do love that term.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, can you tell folks a little bit, you know, what your multiple passions are? What are some of your areas of expertise? Where would you say that you're a known quantity?
Yeah, so I think my passions span across community building and visibility and personal branding and marketing, LinkedIn strategy. And then there's the more social aspects of empowering women and encouraging people to keep social impact in mind and ethical business practices. And so there's so much overlap between all of these things. However, it is a wide span of things. So that's why I'm like very much Renaissance, multi-passionate. I cannot and will not choose one.
I love those anti-niche messages because I don't like getting stuck in a category. And it's so fun to be around people who are feeling that same sort of way. So, Marika, where have you personally thrived as a Renaissance person, or where do you see other Renaissance people thriving?
Honestly, I think in community with other Renaissance multi-passionate people, one of the biggest things I've learned about having this personality type and this type of brain is we cannot take advice from people who don't have this type of brain. We cannot take advice from people who are like in the traditional mold, one path, niche down, value prop, all of those really strict guardrails that come with traditional business practices. Not good advice for us. And I actually went to business school for college. Like, I majored in entrepreneurship, and I still feel like I'm unlearning some of those things, some of those very strict guidelines that just don't nourish my soul, you know?
Absolutely. I know you and I met actually in one of those communities for multi-passionates with Jenny Gritters, the Sustain community. When did you first find out about Jenny, and like what drew you into working with her?
Yeah, I met Jenny at this co-working space that I used to work at in Oregon. We were both at the same co-working space, and she at the time was doing these little tiny free 30-minute business model audits. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that just for fun. I'm always just taking people up on things and, you know, putting myself out there, chatting with people all the time. So of course I see a free offering. I'm doing it. I'm booking it. And I can't explain it in any way other than magic. Watching her take my very vague business idea and actually draw it in a sketchbook, like from top to bottom within 30 minutes, I was like, oh, this is happening. This is fully happening. And I took advantage of so many of her free resources before I joined. All of her materials are just her Substack, her podcast, all that stuff is so great. I love how soft she is. I love how much she leans into emotional intelligence in the business world. And when I met her, I had only been out of school for a year or two. So again, I was very much coming from this perspective of business is your, what's that framework everyone uses? Oh, the like strength, weaknesses, competition, opportunity, those frameworks that they use, it's so rigid. And so when I saw Jenny's, you know, kind of anti that, I was like, yeah, I'm all about it.
It is hard. I'm not somebody who came from a background in business. So going into entrepreneurship was new for me in a way. My mom is a piano teacher. So she is an entrepreneur. She owns her own business, if you will. But I never saw her as an entrepreneur because being a piano teacher just didn't feel like a business that you're promoting and all that sort of thing. But it was very refreshing when I came across Jenny and her original podcast, The Writers Co-op, because that was when I was getting kind of into the world of freelance. And I was also a mom of very young children in a pandemic. So I connected with her from that perspective. I liked that she taught workout classes, and I also taught workout classes. So she just screamed Renaissance woman to me as well when I like first heard her. And I think some of my philosophy on the Renaissance mindset actually came from some of the things that she's been talking about all these years in, like you said, her podcasts, her free trainings. I took advantage of all those things as well. And it really influenced me a lot.
Yes, she has influenced me so much. When I talk about how I can count on one hand the people that I'm willing to take advice from, she's one of them because she's just, you know, built similarly to us. That's why we're all in this community. That's why we all cluster together, is because we're all multi-passionate, creative women. And yeah, I mean, I completely resonate with everything you're saying. I feel like so much of what I talk about nowadays is kind of solopreneurship, sustainable, authentic practices. And a lot of that did come from her and continues to come from her. I take so much inspiration from Jenny. Like, sometimes I'm like, should I make a footnote? Like, credit to Jenny.
I do end up tagging her a lot on social media because another thing I believe in is giving other people credit for their ideas. I do a lot of work in women in STEM. And one problem that tends to come up, and I know I've heard this is also an issue in business broadly, is that a woman may bring up an idea in a meeting and then it gets kind of ignored. And then like later on, a man might bring up the same idea and everybody's like, oh, that's such a great idea. And the woman doesn't actually get credit for being the first one to bring that idea up. Did you see that at all in your classes or in your experience with entrepreneurship?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 1,000,000%. I don't really remember having a woman professor in entrepreneurship at all. Like I had women professors in philosophy and some of the extracurriculars, but I can't remember having, you know, it's been a while, but I don't ever remember having a female professor. So all of those themes definitely came up. Specifically my last year, I had some really tough moments where I was like, wow, business itself was not, it's still not in a place where it feels good and nourishing to be a woman in business. And so I had like 6 months post-grad where I was like, I don't even know if I want to be in the business world at all because it's just so tiring to deal with this stuff. And then eventually I came around, but there was definitely a while there where I was feeling so discouraged and I was like, I can't do it. I'm not the one. I'm not the strongest soldier, you know?
Yeah. I hear that so often from women I talk to in fields like engineering, where they're like, I was excited. I took the classes. There weren't many other females. And now I'm in the workforce and I'm like the only woman on my team. And they begin to question, like, do I belong here? Do I fit into this space? And it's so interesting to see the similarities and do what the title of my show is, which is Connecting the Dots, and seeing those conversations happening in entrepreneurship and business broadly with what's happening for women who are operating in STEM spaces as engineers, as technologists, mathematicians, that sort of thing. Are there any conversations that you're hearing beyond what we hear in Sustain with Jenny and others in that group that give you hope and that could be passed on to women in STEM fields?
Yeah, I definitely do have hope because I feel like a lot of women are claiming their voices and claiming their space. For me specifically, I'm seeing this on LinkedIn because I'm a LinkedIn strategist. So of course, that's where my focus is. And I've seen so many more women going on LinkedIn and being women, they're not trying to sound traditionally masculine and corporate. Like, we're putting up memes, we're talking about our emotions, we're being so fully ourselves and feminine and creative and expressive and beautiful. And I love that so much. I actually had, this is like something that no one ever should have felt comfortable saying to me, but I actually had a man basically make a comment about how there are like too many women on LinkedIn and how it's hard for him to navigate. And I was like, good. I'm actually so glad you feel that way. I'm so glad.
I'm glad I made you uncomfortable.
Yes. I'm like, that's a good sign, actually. That's awesome.
That is wonderful. And I know you're in the middle of a 10-day, what did you call it? A 10-day...
10 post visibility challenge. Yeah, I couldn't get a catchy name for it. So I was like, you know what? We're just going to make a descriptive title here.
I started my Renaissance Readers thing as a book club, soon to be renamed book club, because I'm like, my creative brain is not doing this today. So we're going to call it a book club and come up with a name, but join anyways before we have a fun creative name.
Yes, I love that. I mean, I think so many people get caught up on the name. I was actually just talking, I hosted a workshop on community building last week, and I was telling them, I was like, number one, you guys, if you want to build a community, the number one thing I ask is don't get caught up in the name. Because if someone came to me and said, Marika, there's a local group for female creative solopreneurs, and it's all about nourishing each other and building relationships, and we meet up every Tuesday, I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm so in. What's the name of it? And if they said, oh, it's named Mayonnaise, I'd be like, okay, I'm in. Like a little odd, but I don't care. And so I was like, literally, it could be named Mayonnaise. The group could be named Mayonnaise. But if it's something that I want and the value is there, it doesn't matter. And I think so many people get caught up in the Canva graphics and the naming and all these little details that don't actually really matter, you know?
I almost didn't start Renaissance Woman Consulting when I did because I'm like, oh, I don't have a catch line. I don't have a tag. And a friend was like, why? Why is that the thing stopping you? But yet it does stop us. Why does that stop us? Why do we feel like either that perfectionist need or that societal expectation? Like, where is that coming from?
Honestly, I think it comes from a place of insecurity because we don't want to be perceived. You know, we want to control how we're perceived. I think that's really a huge part of it. Like, even again, to go back to LinkedIn, everyone wants to wait 6 months to pop out with the perfect post. Like, they're like, oh, I'll start next month, next month, next month. I'm just like, I'm working on my comeback post. And I'm like, you're not going to be able to make every single person who views your profile think that you are the most brilliant thing to ever exist. No matter how many months you spend crafting your profile, there are always going to be people who aren't that impressed by what you're doing, or people who think that they know better, or whatever. Like, you're always going to have people who don't think that you are like Christ reincarnated. Like, you can't force people to have this high view of you. So you just need to be yourself, you know? And so I think that's where it gets into this like perfectionism, micromanaging, like even with updating your website, you know, like people don't want to update their website until they have all the perfect words to say, or they don't even want to create a site until they have all the perfect things to say. And I'm like, listen, I don't love ChatGPT copy, but if you have nothing up, you can use some ChatGPT copy and fine tune it later. Just put something out there. It's like the minimum viable product. Like, it's anything's better than nothing, you know, baby steps.
Yep. That's a great idea from the world of startups that others could take and really utilize. And I think one thing that Jamie Cox, who's another person who's leading the Sustain group, she talked about last month in the branding month, that your profile, your about section should actually actively turn off people who are not the right people for you. Like, let's give them the heads up ahead of time. I'm not your person. Go ahead and exit now instead of wasting your time.
100%. I actually had someone in my first LinkedIn sprint who had one of her experiences listed on her LinkedIn profile was being the head of her household. And she had written this whole like beautiful piece in the experience description about how so much of women's work is like this invisible labor that goes unseen and is undervalued, and how she's proud of being a stay-at-home mom for 8 years. And just this very like statement feminist piece. And there was someone else in the sprint who was like, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Like, what if someone doesn't agree with that? And I was like, this was like session one, by the way. So that's why we were like just getting into this idea that, you know, if someone doesn't disagree with that, they're not going to light this woman up to work with. And I was saying, I'm like, you know what? The more bold statement pieces you have like that, the less draining discovery calls you're going to get on. You're only going to get on calls with people who absolutely light you up, you know?
That makes a lot of sense. And it makes me think, like, you're playing the devil's advocate? That's the devil I'm not going to listen to. I don't want to hang out with devils.
Right.
So good.
Right. Let's not advocate for the devil.
Yeah. I think many of us can agree with that statement. Well, can you tell me about another space or time where you find yourself connecting dots for other people and maybe bringing ideas from one space into a different space?
Yeah, well, I think I have kind of two different spaces in my business, work, career world right now. And one is LinkedIn strategy and everything that comes with that. And then the other is actually my in-person group, which is called Purpose-Driven Professionals. And that has nothing to do with LinkedIn. So the two things are pretty separate. The one overarching theme is purpose-driven. I use that word across everything. But really, the group is just a meetup for people across sectors, nonprofit, for-profit, B Corp, all the things. Just a nourishing space to connect. Versus LinkedIn is like specifically LinkedIn strategy. I'm specifically talking to solopreneurs. So again, with the Renaissance piece, those are two very different areas. But I do see so much overlap because a lot of the blocks are the same and a lot of the things that we're craving are the same. Like, on both sides, everyone's craving community. And so you can like connect those dots to be like, whether it's in-person community or community on LinkedIn, whatever it is. And then there's also this huge fear of visibility across both environments. Like, no matter the industry, no matter the sector, no matter the context, a lot of people are really scared to be seen. But then they're also craving community. So it's like a little bit of a oxymoron.
Catch 22.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Catch 22. Exactly.
Yeah. I see that in a lot of the work that I do because, as you know, I also do LinkedIn sprints, a little different than yours, but still giving people that opportunity to get out there and put themselves out there authentically on a platform that's not known for its authenticity. And I try to help them understand that I like to describe the algorithm on LinkedIn as like an old dog. And you got to train the dog. And so based on what you engage with and who you talk to and what you talk about, that kind of dictates what LinkedIn is going to show you. And so if you don't want to just see the bros talking about like the seven-figure business they're building and the hustle they're doing, you engage with people who are talking about other things and you have genuine conversations. And I know I do what you also do, which is you respond to all the comments that you get on your LinkedIn posts authentically and have a like a two-way conversation with those people.
Yes, 100%. I think when you haven't tuned your LinkedIn feed, which is something that I'm glad you brought up because I think a lot of people don't even realize that that's a thing. It's not talked about that much, but it is easy to think that LinkedIn is a very evil, cold, corporate place when that's what's being shown to you. But if you just hit not interested, unfollow, not interested, unfollow, nobody has to know. But slowly over time, your feed will become beautiful because mine has become actually addictive. It's like Twitter or Instagram. Like there's so much fun and humorous stuff on there that I'm like, I actually am to the point where I need to monitor my screen time on LinkedIn, which is so funny because it used to be like a challenge to even get myself to open the app. And now I'm like, I can't close it.
I have a similar problem. And then, of course, knowing that because of the way that it works, it's best to go and kind of like warm up the platform a little bit and start engaging with other posts before you make a post. But then you get so engaged with everything that you don't get to making your post and you like run out of time and you're like, oops, I was supposed to be doing something else. But I was having such an enjoyable time actually interacting with other people. I do career coaching for folks and I love being able to show job openings or job listings. And I get those all the time in my feed and I'm able to reshare all the time. And I know a lot of people are like, I don't see any jobs being listed, but I'm seeing them come up a lot in my feed. And I'm not necessarily looking for myself, certainly not for full-time positions, just kind of freelance and projects. But it feels so good to be able to see these things and share them and then tell people there are things out there and you can connect directly in some cases with the people who are listing those positions and find your opportunities through, I know, networking, that four-letter word. I just think of it as building community. Like by building community, you can get a better chance at getting a job in a really hard market.
In a really hard market. And that's the thing is like any glimmer of hope in this crazy world is so meaningful. And that's the other thing with like the preconceived notions about LinkedIn is like you get to choose how you use the app. Like you can use it how you just said, literally spreading hope, spreading the information that people need to hear. Or you can use it to make people feel bad about not making as much money as you do. You know, like there, one of my friends, Sam Hinman, was speaking to my sprint the other day and she's like, yeah, there's people on LinkedIn who are like, I made $1 million last month and you could too if you weren't such an idiot. And I thought that was such a funny line. Like you could too if you weren't such an idiot. And it's true. It's like you could use LinkedIn to just talk about how amazing you are and how everyone else is doing everything wrong. Or you can use it, like you just said, to like actually build community and make people feel good. Like I always try to come back to how do I want people to feel when they see my profile? I don't want them to feel like they're not doing enough or like they're falling behind. I want them to feel like supported and like they can actually be themselves and they can be, you know, yeah, authentic on LinkedIn and not have to hide any part of themselves is really kind of the vibe I'm going for.
Makes a lot of sense. And it's how I try to operate in that space as well. Well, I want to get back to the idea of being a multi-potentialite and being interested, as both of us are, in a lot of things. So when you're being authentically yourself, either in person or on the platform, and you want to describe yourself and how multifaceted your background is, how do you do that without overwhelming people?
Ooh, you know, from a place of integrity, like genuinely not trying to mislead people or hide anything, but there definitely are certain chapters that I'm like, I'm just not even going to get into this because it's solely just going to confuse people. Like, I don't need to talk about the fact that, well, I'm talking about it right now, but like, for example, I got my certification in end of life doula training. And it's like, I'm not really doing that work. I would do that work. I'll probably return to that throughout my life, but it has absolutely zip, nothing, zero to do with what I'm doing right now, other than maybe like basic empathy skills and communication and that kind of stuff. Like, sure, there's some transference, but it's not really worth mentioning this entire journey about how like I had this beautiful death experience with my grandpa and then I ended up doing that. Like, it's just not, it's kind of a distraction. And then same thing with like how I very first got into entrepreneurship was actually through turning my backyard into a quote unquote wedding venue, like a super intimate little thing. And it was like such a, like the way that I marketed it was like quirky little outdoor venue. And it was literally just like my backyard. And that was like my first ever entrepreneurial venture. I never, ever, ever talk about that. Maybe one day I will if it comes up, but I just don't think it's super saying like, no, I never did death doula stuff. I never opened a wedding venue. Like, I'll own that stuff if it comes up, but I just like don't really bring it up on a day-to-day basis because I think it adds more confusion than clarity.
Yeah, I think that's something Renaissance people struggle with. I know I really struggled, especially when I first started working with Jenny. I felt like I was losing some aspect of myself if I didn't give a like multidimensional explanation. But I didn't have a word or the Renaissance mindset to describe that. Instead, I was like, hi, I'm Sarah Kobilka, and I've been a reporter and a meteorologist, and I work nonprofit, and I've worked in higher education, I do science communication, and then it just goes on, and people are like looking at their watch, and they're like, is she done introducing herself yet? And so that ability to focus, I think, is one of the struggles that we as Renaissance people have. And we have to find that language, like multi-passionate, to explain to people that we are multidimensional, but like you said, we're not giving them everything. We're not actively withholding and hiding things, but we are just acting with intention and sharing the right amount of detail about ourselves.
Yes, exactly. I think two things. One, it's all about context. Like, if people are saying, how do you navigate communicating on LinkedIn during a tough time like the loss of a loved one? I can be like, hey, I know a thing or two about that. It can come up there. Or if people are like, how do you use LinkedIn as an event planner or someone who owns a venue? I'm like, hey, again, never mentioned this before, but let me tell you something. But secondly, I think for me, a huge part of accepting that I'm built this way is actually creating, like you said, kind of these umbrella terms that allow me to explore. Like, purpose-driven professionals is an in-person meetup group. And under the framework of purpose-driven professionals, I feel like I can explore so much. Like, I've kind of been wanting to do some pop-up co-working sessions in cafes. And I thought to myself, ooh, should I start a series in a new meetup group, like co-working in cafes? And then I'm realizing, oh, I can just throw that under purpose-driven professionals. If I want to have a creators meetup, I can throw that under purpose-driven professionals. Like, it's nice to have an umbrella brand that I accept that I'm going to bring random things into instead of establishing a new brand every single time, which is kind of what I used to do. So I think accepting this reality about myself has made me build frameworks around it. Like, I'm not going to have a super niche name. Even like my LinkedIn strategy business is technically named, I usually just use my name, but it's technically named Design Bend. And anything goes under the name Design Bend. But if I had specifically named it LinkedIn Strategy Bend or something, then it's like I'm fully limited to LinkedIn strategy. But under Design Bend, I can talk about community building. I can talk about visibility. I can talk about all these things. So I think it's just like giving yourself room to expand and know that you're going to have some random crazy ideas pop into your head. And how can you incorporate those in what you currently have without it being all over the place? It
makes a lot of sense. Renaissance woman and Renaissance people is operating in that same sort of way for me. So yeah, I understand that a lot. What originally drew you to the idea of purpose-driven people?
Good question. Really good question. It was because I've been in the business world and I volunteered a lot, like very intensely in the nonprofit world. And in the nonprofit world, there's a lot of nonprofit only meetups. And in the business world, there's a lot of businessy meetups that aren't necessarily about like giving back, or they aren't about social impact. And so I noticed that there was kind of this gap, because business professionals are going into these networking events and they're very transactional. A lot of times they're really masculine. And it's just, I always say like, Mr. Krabs, give me money, give me money. Like, that's what I picture with a lot of traditional business networking events. But as a business owner, you're kind of blocked from these nonprofit only events. So it's like, okay, where am I welcome to bring my heart and soul? Like, I don't want to just toss out business cards and talk about the ROI of my services and be so Shark Tank business-like. But I also, again, am not necessarily welcome or fit into these nonprofit only meetups. So I wanted something that was like in between, like it brings passionate people together on both sides, especially because there are passionate people on both sides. Like, there are kind-hearted people in the business world and in the nonprofit world. And yeah, I just wanted to bring them all together.
That makes a lot of sense. It makes me think of the analogy of the Venn diagram. And I think that Renaissance people are very multidimensional Venn diagrams. And so we are operating in those overlapping places between multiple circles, or being the boundary spanners. You're a person who understands nonprofits and volunteerism, and you understand business, and you find that happy spot in the middle where you can connect people and ideas between those two different areas.
I cannot tell you how excited I am that you use the word Venn diagram, because that is exactly the graphic that I use. I literally have a graphic up somewhere on my LinkedIn that's a Venn diagram showing purpose-driven professionals. And whenever I'm at these events explaining the concept to people, like opening up the floor, I literally take my hands and illustrate a Venn diagram by doing like two circles with my hands. So the fact that you said that without me even having to say it is beautiful.
Serendipity. I actually have a Venn diagram somewhere on my website as well.
I love a good Venn diagram. I really do.
They're the best. Oh, yeah. So much more fun and interesting. So this kind of gets into this next question that I have, which is, what do you do when you encounter boundaries? When you see like these barriers that are separating different things or separating you from what's next, how do you address them?
Ooh, I run in the opposite direction. Or I just create something new myself. But I really do not like bureaucracy and having to run anything through a board or having to read through policies. Like, all of that stuff, all of those, like you said, like walls, it just doesn't sit right with me. I'm such a flowy person. And I think you are too, to the point that it's like, what? You're telling me, so if I want to like run a marketing campaign that's going to be so creative and fun where we talk to the community, I have to make a pitch to the board about it No, I just want to start now, especially because it's like, I feel like with our type of brains, when we think of something, we're like, this is happening now, not next week, not next month. Like, we're starting now. It's actually, I just wrapped up the campaign. Like, I thought of it 2 seconds ago and it's done. Like, so
moving on. Yes.
So to have to like wait to hear approval from the board or from the city or whatever is like torture for me. And I always end up leaving those environments and either starting my own thing or just being like, sorry, we're done. I'm not even dealing with it.
That was a huge part of multiple job moves I've made. I was executive director of the Iowa Arboretum in Madrid, Iowa, and having to deal with the board was one of the biggest frustrations of my work there. And I've worked in higher education in 2 universities since graduating. And again, it's that hierarchical structure that said you have to go through this hoop and this hoop and this person has to sign off. And then maybe like 2 months later, it will actually happen. And that was one of the most frustrating things for me. I'm like, this is not how I operate. We have to move things forward faster. We're not keeping up with society. We're not keeping up with how things are moving forward. And that's been a struggle, I think, for like higher education right now, when so many changes have happened in the last year. They're not catching up with it very quickly.
Oh, yeah. I totally see that. And it's like, logistically, the consequences of it, not so good. Even emotionally, I'm like, 2 months from now, I'm not even excited about this anymore. Like, again, with our different brains, it's like, I've probably pivoted 17 times since then. Like, who knows? I pitched like 5 different workshop topics to this series that took a long time to like get back to me because they had to run it through committees. And by the time it got back to me, I was like, I don't even want to talk about 4 out of 5 of those topics anymore. Like, I'm not currently interested in those topics anymore. Sorry.
You missed your chance, folks. Sorry.
I'm like, I need to send you a new proposal and then we can wait another 2 months for you to get back to me and I'll be sick of those topics and send you another proposal. Like, we move fast around here.
Yeah, some industries are much better at that than others. I do have a question that comes up now from what you're talking about. So in the last episode, I was talking with someone who is a career coach and we were talking about neurodivergence and how so many Renaissance people would describe themselves as being neurospicy, at least, if not having an official diagnosis. Do you tend to see that as well? And why do you think that happens?
I was wondering if we were going to get into that today. I was like, should I bring it up?
Will she do it? Elephant in the room.
Oh my gosh. So the funniest thing is I actually didn't even realize that I was neurodivergent until genuinely a couple months ago, and not, maybe even less than that. And it's so funny because everyone that I'm like telling this groundbreaking news to is like, how did you not know that?
I have some gay friends who, when they came out, it's like, yeah, I knew.
So crazy how sometimes everyone else can see something that you don't. But one of the things that actually helped me, this I feel like is such an unhinged thing to say, but it was ChatGPT that first told me. Like, people, okay, humans had kind of told me before, but I wasn't really listening to them for whatever reason. But hearing it from such a, like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say grounded source because that feels kind of crazy to say, but hearing it from such a, I guess, objective source, maybe,
yeah,
for whatever reason, it was able to point out, like, here's what you've said to me over the past however many years we've had ChatGPT. Here are all the things you've said and all the phases that you've gone through that perfectly align with this. And I was like, oh, okay.
So what prompt did you put in that brought this out?
So random, but I just so happened to have PMDD. And I read an article that said that there was a huge overlap between PMDD and ADHD. And I was solely just interested in the article and the facts. So I was like, tell me more about this. And then it was explaining it, and I was like, just randomly, do you think I have ADHD or even autism? Like, could I be on the spectrum? just so randomly like said it. And it was like, you might want to sit down for this. No joke. That was the line.
You've got a saucy ChatGPT there.
Yes, she reflects me. She reflects my voice. So she is very sassy and girly for sure.
You know, that makes me think about what we were discussing in that previous episode, which I brought up, which is women in their like 30s, early 40s are the group most frequently being diagnosed newly with ADHD. And one of the big reasons for that is because their children are getting diagnosed. Because of the new diagnosis criteria, we're catching more children sooner. We're finding that girls have ADHD, where in the past, everything was kind of based on, if you're a boy who bounces off the wall, you have ADHD. If you're a girl who can sit still, you obviously don't have it, which is not true. But it's seeing someone else diagnosed, and then they're like, wait, but that person's like me. And it sounds kind of like a similar sort of experience for you.
Oh, 100%. It was seeing high-achieving women explain their diagnoses. That's exactly what it was. I had no idea what ADHD looked like in women, and especially in high-functioning, high-achieving women. I had no clue that that was even a thing. And then there were a couple women. One was Jenny Gritters, and then the other was a woman named Sandy Bean, who you should definitely connect with if you haven't. She's awesome. But hearing from both of them, who I feel like I have a lot of similarities with, and both of them are women that I really look up to, and being like, oh, you're talking about this experience that you have, that means you have ADHD, and I also have that experience. Does that mean I maybe have this? That was what kind of first like opened my mind to it, I think. But I really didn't have the full realization until genuinely ChatGPT was like, hey, listen. But
listen, friend. Well, I haven't said it yet, but everyone get ready to take your drink, because we're going to throw that in the show notes. I'll have you send me some links to some of your favorite things that you've read that kind of helped you understand and maybe begin to ask those questions of ChatGPT or reach out to a professional to kind of get a diagnosis. So we'll throw it in the chat. Take a drink, everybody.
I love that, because I was just going to say, I have a screenshot, but it doesn't include like the article's title in it. But last night I was reading this article and it says, decades ago, for every girl diagnosed, 10 boys were identified. That's wild. But yeah, I was like, I wanted to quote that, but I don't have the link. So I can put it in the show notes. I love that.
We'll put it in the show notes. Take a drink. There's a lot of great resources out there. What are some of your other favorite resources for people who are entrepreneurs, in particular women or non-binary folks or Renaissance men, because they're part of our crew too? What are some good resources that you've come across for them as they're maybe rejecting the message of niching or rejecting the hyper-masculinity, hyper-competitive language of entrepreneurship?
Yeah, probably you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, seriously. Like, I only have a couple, and it would really be you, Jenny Gritters, and then Sandy Bean, who is based in Tampa Bay, Florida, so she's local to me. But yeah, those are like really the big ones. I mean, Sandy Bean specifically, she really specializes in neurodiversity and inclusion of neurodiversity and working with your neurodiversity, especially as a high achieving woman. So she's been a huge inspiration to me in this regard, for sure. There's got to be some others that I'm forgetting, and so sorry.
I was going to say, there's a few sustained people.
Yes.
We'll have to throw Jamie Cox in Take a Drink in the show notes. And Andrea is doing stuff.
And so is Alex.
I think Maggie Blackburn also touches on multi-passionate.
Yeah.
Man, which is cool.
Yeah. We bring us all together and we all share and build each other up, which is so wonderful to be in a community like that, because we don't all have that. And you and I have both actually talked about this quite a bit on LinkedIn, which is that we have this epidemic of loneliness going on in our country and worldwide. And while not everyone can gather in person or can gather in person as much as they might want to, there is that digital space, that virtual space where we can make at least a good enough community where we're actively supporting and encouraging each other.
100%. That just made me realize too, the other Jamie in Sustain, I don't know how you pronounce her last name, Jamie Hamre, like it's Hamre. She does a Friday, like get it done club for ADHDers, which is cool.
That's who I was trying to think of. So Sustain friends, we're going to be throwing all of you in the show notes.
Yeah, we really are very blessed. And it's awesome. It really is. It's really cool how we all kind of like flock together and find each other. It's so funny because it makes me have this perception of like, oh, everyone's multi-passionate, everyone's creative, everyone's a solopreneur, everyone's neurospicy. And it's like, no, that's just who you surround yourself with, you know?
We are magnetically attracted to each other.
Yes.
I think there's a lot to it. I once gave a talk, Normal People Bore Me.
Yes.
And it's true.
Yeah.
Because I can chat with them. I can do small talk, just not about weather. As a meteorologist, I don't do small talk about weather very well. But give me a person who's lived in another country, who has been a doula, who is teaching workout classes, who loves to garden, who is a theater nerd, who also is a scientist, like, those are my people.
Yes. I think sometimes there's also this awkward moment where sometimes I've like misread the room and I like think we're about to go so deep. Like I'm like, yeah, let's talk about like death. Let's talk about the experience of it. What was the most beautiful death you ever witnessed? And everyone's like, what are you doing?
I just came for the wine and for hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know. But I think, again, with this type of brain, like, we don't necessarily have an off switch.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
true.
Probably the solution is never to pretend to be something we're not and to try to force ourselves to be some type of way. Because that was the thing for the longest time. I thought that I was, like, flaky and, yeah, I guess flaky would be the word for it, for having all these different iterations. I thought that it reflected really badly on me and I was really embarrassed of it.
Yeah.
Really, honestly, genuinely very embarrassed of all the different iterations and different pivots I've taken, especially because in the past, every time that I've taken a pivot, I've come out so confident with it. Like I've been like, this is me now, this is fully what I'm doing. And then 6 months later, I'm doing something slightly different. So again, it's just been like accepting that that's part of me and no longer feeling ashamed of it. If anything, feeling proud of it, feeling like, hey, that's actually really cool that I'm that creative and that I have this many ideas and that I have the ability to pursue them all. Like that's honestly magical. And also knowing that I am the way that I am, no longer coming out with this confidence of I found the thing I'm going to do for the rest of my life, because I probably will have never found one thing that I'm going to do for the rest of my life. There will always be more iterations.
Yes. I hate the question, what are you going to be when you grow up, that we ask children. And Michelle Obama also hates that question. I'll throw the link in the show notes, take a drink, for an article where she just rips it apart because it's a singular. Kids are supposed to answer with like some sort of occupation. And I am so big about saying to my own kids, like, what things are you gonna do? It's always plural. It's like, what kinds of jobs are you gonna have? What kind of fun things do you wanna do when you grow up or as you're growing up? And when my daughter says, I'm gonna be a meteorologist and a chemist and a ballet dancer and a Care Bear. And I'm like, you go, girl. You're going to be all those things.
Yes. Yes. Because we have so much time.
Yeah. And you can be many things at the same time.
Yes.
You don't have to limit yourself. You have to focus. There's that really difficult balance that we have to play between having all those ideas, but focusing enough energy into a certain project at a certain time that it moves forward. But you can still have all those ideas in your head or in a notebook, in a sketch that Jenny has made out. They can all exist.
100%. I think sometimes it's even okay to like work on things in the background purely to nourish your soul and like never even tell anyone or like wait to tell anyone until it's like so solid. For example, it's so funny because I'm talking about all these things that I'm like, don't tell anyone you're doing this, but here's what I'm doing. But like, I really will. I'll give an example, like full
transparency. This is the space for it, though.
Exactly.
Like, we're all Renaissance nerds here.
Exactly. So like full transparency, I have like so many little free like lead gens because it's so fun for me to create those free offers, like freebies, lead gens, whatever. For whatever reason, that's like my bread and butter. I love creating little free offerings.
And gens, for people who are not from the business community, is generators.
Yeah.
So like you get this free thing and then I get your name and email address and I can tell you about the other cool stuff I'm doing.
Yes, exactly. I could come up with probably 300 different little free offerings. Like that's one of my places that I'm very, I don't know. I just love doing that. And so anyways, I recently made a LinkedIn archetypes quiz and I haven't like shown it to anybody yet because I'm like, I have so many offerings out right now and so many freebies that like there really just isn't space for this in my ecosystem right now. But eventually it'll probably come out, even if it doesn't. I just had this urge in my soul to make a fun little archetypes quiz and I made it and that fed my soul. Whether I tell anybody about it or not, I mean, now I have because I'm saying it, but whether I ever like actually publish it and have people use it or not, I've still like, I've sent it to my friends just for fun and I can still let it nourish my soul and my creativity without having it distract from my business.
I hope you know that I expect to have you send that to me so that I can take it later.
Yes, because I would love to see yours. It's genuinely so fun for me. And so again, not wanting to limit myself, like I never want to be like, no, Marika, focus. Don't make an archetypes quiz right now. You have bigger fish to fry. It's like, no, make the archetypes quiz if it feeds your soul, because your soul is what generates all of this work to begin with. Like as soon as we lose our buzz and our spark and our motivation, the whole thing kind of fizzles out. So yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we're going to play a quick game and then we'll end with some rapidish fire questions because Renaissance people have a hard time being actually rapid. So we're calling rapidish. So here's what we're doing for our game. It's a fill in the blank game. You and I will go back and forth. So I will go first with the example. You know you're a Renaissance person if when someone says, tell me about yourself, give me your elevator pitch, you say, how tall is the building? Your turn.
You know you're a Renaissance person if all of your career pivots would not fit on one post-it note.
Oh my goodness, yes. I actually have a giant stack of post-it notes where I was trying to make like a representation of the bramble that is my career. And the term bramble comes from my friend, Renaissance man, Patrick Meany. I'll put in the show notes, take a drink, a link to his LinkedIn post on that. But it took a lot of post-it notes. Okay, here, I'll go again. You know you're a Renaissance person if when you see a family member you haven't seen for a long time, they say, what are you doing now? I can't keep up with you.
That is a really good one. I was just going to say your family has no idea what you do for work. but let's see.
I stole it. Sorry.
I would say
we have two of the same mind.
I think I have another one. It's okay. You know you're a Renaissance person when you tell someone something about your life, someone who's known you forever, and they go, I never knew you did that. And it was something that lasted a full year of your life.
Yeah, that's happened. It's true. We're hard to handle, and we're not going to simplify ourselves for anybody too much. Okay, so here's our rapidish fire questions. What is one metaphor you find yourself using frequently? And my example is I use gardening as a metaphor for community building and networking all the time.
Ooh, a metaphor that I use in my head, I don't necessarily use it out loud very much, but I compare building visibility and building community to training for a half marathon and running because I'm doing that right now. And so I'm constantly, it's so nerdy and dorky, but I will be on a run training for my half marathon and I'll like think to myself, yeah, you have to put in the work and the consistency every day for marathon training. just like on LinkedIn. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I can't say that.
You know what? I will forward you some of the emails from my LinkedIn spring, because almost every one of them uses the analogy of a sprint and a marathon, and how like your social media presence is either a sprint or a marathon. I am 100% with you.
I love that, because I really do have so many analogies about it. Like almost every time that I run, I come up with something. Like I'll trip and I'll be like, even on LinkedIn, you're going to trip. And I'm like, oh, who am I?
You are my person. So it's all good. We'll post and then we'll tag each other and we'll be like, yes. I like take pictures of my shoes while I'm running, because I'm like, someday I'm going to make another post using the metaphor of running for something. And now I have the picture for it.
I love that. I think it's partially the runner's high too, because I have so many unhinged voice notes that I'll like talk into my phone, make a voice note, be like, make a LinkedIn post about blah, 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 blah. And then afterwards I'm like, never. Who was that,
that girl on? It's called the natural high of running. Okay, here's another question. What's one rabbit hole that you've gone down recently?
Great question. I have gone down a branding rabbit hole recently. I've been looking at branding and messaging, and I've been looking at the people that I aspire to, and I recently, just yesterday actually on a Sunday, which I was like, this is again such a wild thing to be doing on a Sunday, but I spent like 4 hours making a mood board of all these people that I aspire to be like, and their branding and their photos and all that kind of stuff. And so that's something I've been really into recently, is like branding and messaging specifically, because I'm kind of wanting to elevate mine just a little bit. So it's something that I'm pretty obsessed with.
Okay, here's the final question. And you've already given us 2 juicy nuggets, so I hope you have more. What's another thing from your background that might surprise people?
So I actually grew up performing basketball tricks. My dad can like balance a ladder on his chin, a wheelbarrow on his chin. He'll like take a balance board and stack up like 20 feet of boxes and then balance on top of it. And my mom can dribble 6 basketballs at once while balancing on a board, and they juggle and they do all these tricks. And so I grew up doing that stuff, and not many people know that, but I can dribble 4 basketballs at once. I can dribble while standing on a balance board. I can like do all of these crazy basketball tricks and confidently perform them in front of hundreds of people.
That seems like a beautiful metaphor for a multi-passionate person who can handle 4 basketballs at the same time.
It's so true. I should use that more. See, this is another thing that like, it's just in the back of my mind. I never talk about it because I know it's not very relatable. Like, I've never had someone say to me, oh, same.
I do have a, what is he, second cousin who's a juggler.
Okay, believe
it. And so I do have actually a connection to someone. And then I have another friend who ran off with Cirque du Soleil.
Oh.
He was an usher. He was not performing, but he was so drawn to Cirque du Soleil that he actually ran off and was with them for a number of years.
That was my mom's dream, was to perform in Cirque du Soleil. They actually had like an application open up, and I was like, Mom, like they're accepting applications. And she was like, don't even say that. Like, don't get me excited. I don't want to have my heart broken. Like, no. It, like, she just, and same thing with America's Got Talent. There's just some crazy
stuff. I was thinking that in my head, America's Got Talent.
Yeah, she was like, almost made it on America's Got Talent year after year after year. She made like a clip on there, but that was also like a tough one because it was like a huge dream. And then it was like always like just out of reach until eventually she was like, this is too like emotionally draining to, I don't know, go back and forth with. But yeah, my parents actually, weirdly enough, my mom especially, because that's like what my mom does to this day. And she doesn't really like to be associated with jugglers, believe it or not. I don't know what the beef is there. I have no idea. She gets offended when people categorize her as a juggler. She's more so actually uses the term motivational speaker, because she pairs motivational speaking with her basketball tricks. So I don't know. She does juggle.
You're giving a TED talk, because I could totally see that as a TED talk.
That would be really cool, actually.
And maybe that's more like doable, like one of the local TED talks.
Yes. Like TEDx, it's, that's such, yeah, a good point. That is such a good point. I don't know if we have TEDx in Vermont because my mom lives in Vermont, but
she awesome. Could drive down to New York.
Yeah, or Boston.
Somewhere. Boston, yeah. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This is super fun, and we'll keep chatting on places like LinkedIn. I know that's one of the big places for people to follow you. Is there any other way that they can connect with you or that you recommend them learning more about you?
I would just go to marikaluno.com, just my main website, because all my offerings are there, even like my speaking offerings, all kinds of stuff is there. And if I ever have freebies, I usually throw them on there too. But LinkedIn is definitely where I camp out for sure.
Excellent. Well, then I'll see you there. And I want to thank you again, especially we had some tech problems at the beginning and you powered through. So thank you so much for being with me and for being an amazing multi-potentialite Renaissance woman.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. I would do this all day, every day, if given the opportunity. Like, I also just do have to throw in that I'm so grateful that you're even doing this. I think that the world needs this, and I'm so excited to see where this podcast goes, because I just think that it can be so comforting, especially in my mind. I picture like younger girls who are maybe just realizing these things about themselves and feeling like weirdos and feeling like they're flaky or whatever. Like, to be able to hear from people who are a little bit more seasoned or just have like come to terms with things, I just think it's beautiful. I honestly would have loved to have heard this podcast like 3 years ago. I think it would have been a huge comfort, but now it's like the best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago. The next best time is today or whatever. I think it's awesome. So thank you.
Thank you for being such an amazing supporter. I will talk to you another day.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much. Bye.
Connecting the dots with the Renaissance people.